The widespread closing of venues and cancellations of shows has abruptly halted the vibrant Twin Cities live music industry. Without knowing when we can gather again, XL Energy Center and Michelob Golden Light have partnered to bring awareness to the needs of those significantly impacted by this shutdown. Songs for the Cities supports the Twin Cities Music Community Trust, whose vision is to provide assistance to the local live music industry workforce. Visit XLEnergyCenter.com to learn more and to make a donation. Now, let's listen to Songs for the Cities featuring our host, Chris Hockey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Songs for the Cities, brought to you by XL Energy Center and Michelob Golden Light, a podcast series that starts right now and starts today to help benefit Twin Cities Music Community Trust. Yes, this podcast will help raise money for a fund that is helping Minnesotans who have lost performances due to the pandemic and feeling all the effects of it on the live music industry. Of course, it includes musicians, night staff, door staff, bartenders, you name it, security, stage crews, tour managers, merchandise sellers, and photographers. You'll see the banner right here on this page that you're downloading the podcast from for Twin Cities Music Community Trust. If you've got anything to spare, please donate and help out the people who need it the most. Kat Perkins is my very first guest on Songs for the Cities. Hi, Kat.
How are you? Thank you so much for thinking of me and having me on.
You were my first thought when we talked about doing this because obviously we are friends. I love you, and we've done a lot of shows together and sung together, but I've never had an opportunity to really dive into your career, your life, and your music. So I figured this is an opportunity to raise some money and get to know you a little bit better in the same time.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So, you know what? Let's just get started with exactly why we're doing this podcast. You're somebody who lives for music and lives because of music. I mean, this is your job. How are you finding your way through this crisis and the lack of gigs?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, it's always been like the last 5 years, honestly, I wake up every day and think how lucky I am to be able to make a living at music and in the entertainment business. And so this was a huge blow, as a lot of people are really experiencing. I'm not the only one. I think there's strength in thinking about that every day, where I'm not the only one that just got suddenly unemployed. But I'll tell you, the first 10 days of losing all my employment and watching all these gigs drop off the calendar was tough. It was tough on my mental health. It was paralyzing, I guess, is what I would describe it as. And I just, you know, wanted to curl up in a ball and just, I questioned why am I in this business? Why this is going to be the last business to come back when it's all said and done, and all of these questions, right? Until I really let myself get all that out and then was able to sort of reframe and reimagine and feel really lucky again that I am in this business. And I just started doing different things, like trying to spread joy in communities by singing. That's my gift. I will always use it no matter what. And if I can monetize, great. And if I can't, whatever.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what form has that taken? Have you been doing video casts? How have you been doing that?
Yeah, the first thing that we did was starting to do like live, Facebook Lives and live broadcasts. And fortunately, a lot of awesome, you know, big companies were hiring us to actually do live concerts on the weekend to entertain their employees that were now working from home or the ones that were furloughed, which was great. But then once we did a few of those, I was like, why can't we do this in live person, even during social distancing? And so I came up with this crazy idea of going to people's curbside and the end of their driveways and just singing for them. And I started with the people that I knew. I started with friends and family members, and we just started going into these different communities in the Twin Cities where I'm based. And singing for people and watching the joy come across their faces and watching their neighbors come out to the patio and sort of just seeing this normalcy and this happiness ensue from singing.
Wow. And how has that been received? Are you recording this so that people can see them online and such like that as well?
We did a few of the first ones. We went live and we made it available so you could see it. I think that's definitely the next step to make that consistent. But what ended up happening is people just we got flooded with requests for people that, you know, wanted to send us to, you know, their elderly grandmother.
Sure.
In Minnesota, or to their grandma that was having a birthday, or to their 9-year-old nephew that was celebrating a birthday during the pandemic. And so finally, I was like, you know, really overwhelmed by these requests. I set up an online portal through my website where you could just request me and go to my calendar, and I make myself available for certain times of the day and week. And you can just get me to come to wherever you want me to go. And then what we ended up doing was starting to put out a tip jar and asking for, you know, some, you know, tips appreciated, not necessary, but appreciated. And then that started to be so successful that we ended up thinking about, you know, how can we help our community doing this? Not only us, but how can we give back? And so what we do is we give a portion of each day's tips and earnings to charity. And at first I was choosing a different charity every single week. And then we landed on Second Harvest Heartland, which is based out of the Twin Cities. It's, you know, a food shelf that is so, so needed right now. And I just decided, you know, we should just land on these guys for a while. So up to this point that we're recording today, I have been able to provide nearly 700 meals for people around the Twin Cities through just singing at the curbside.
That's unbelievable. I mean, how wonderful is that?
I think it feels so good.
I can't even imagine, because you're taking, as you said, you're taking your gift, you're taking what you love to do, and you're finding a way to help people. And this is something that would not have existed. You would never even have thought to try this. Is this something that you think even post pandemic that you might try to continue, something like that?
Oh my gosh, I'm telling you, you know, people keep asking me now, how long will you do this and whatever. And I think that we should totally just keep this business model for after the pandemic, because it's just, it's so much fun and it brings joy, and it's just something different that you can do for, you know, a special occasion or just to brighten your day. And I'm telling you, the after effects from this pandemic are going to be, you know, we're going to see, they're going to be rampant after, no matter what happens. If we start opening up our state, people are still going to be depressed. People are still going to need a little joy in their lives. So I will absolutely continue to do it after we open everything up again, for sure.
Tell everybody how they can access this, how they can reach out to you.
It's super easy. We've just linked everything up to catperkins.com, and you'll see it. We branded it now as Curbside Concerts, and it'll just say book now. It's super easy. You can just choose a date and time of your liking, and you can send me to somebody else's address, or you can send me to your own. We there's a little questionnaire that happens to know what kind of genre of music that you want me to sing, and bing, bang, boom, it's done. You're booked.
That's fantastic. I mean, honestly, that is... what a great idea. So leave it to Kat Perkins to come up with the next great live music idea. Again, catperkins.com. They're called Curbside Concerts. So go on there and find out all about that, and try to get her to come to your curbside. Why not? Again, you're listening to the Songs for the Cities podcast. My name is Chris Hockey, talking to Kat Perkins. Kat, I want to talk to you about two specific songs, because part of this is to get to know your music a little bit and your original songs and the thought process behind recording them and so on and so forth. But before we get there, for the people out there, and there probably aren't many left in the Twin Cities, but there are some, I'm sure, who don't know much about Kat Perkins. Tell me, first of all, from the very beginning, where are you from?
You know, I'm originally from a little tiny town called Scranton, North Dakota. And I have a transplant here to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And now I'm pushing almost 20 years living in Minneapolis, which I now call home.
And tell me about your little town.
So Scranton is a town of 280 people when I was there. I feel like that's probably dwindled by maybe even 100 at this point. A little mining town in rural North Dakota, southwest corner, kind of south of the Badlands, almost Montana, almost South Dakota. Not much music opportunity there. Hmm. A lot of farming opportunity and teaching opportunity there, of course. But it definitely wasn't very conducive to live singing, for sure. So hence the move. And I did it very boldly at 18 years old.
So what were you doing musically before that?
You know, I was taking every opportunity that I possibly could. I did a lot of theater in North Dakota. I started my own band. And granted, I just told you we were in Scranton. So the band consisted of like my dad and my sister and my uncle and my cousin.
Sure.
It was very much a family affair. But when I moved here, I did a lot more theater, and, you know, a lot of things were more professional out here, as in I was getting paid to act and sing and dance, and eventually started my own band called Scarlet Haze in the Twin Cities, which was actually pretty successful.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When I first moved here, I remember hearing a lot about Scarlet Haze. And obviously a hard rock band. Now let's go back again. Was hard rock something you loved as a kid, or did it just happen that that's the kind of music you gravitated to for a while when you were, entering Minneapolis for the first time?
Oh, man, I actually grew up with it all. Thanks to a very musical father and musician in my father. But I was definitely influenced by hard rock music. I was just thinking about my favorite albums the other day and kind of revisiting during this pandemic, visiting albums that I loved growing up. And one of them was Van Halen. And one of them was Def Leppard. I was in love with the album Hysteria as a second grader, as a third grader. Like I absolutely gravitated toward that hard rock. So when it came to writing my own songs, then I was really inclined to that's what kind of just automatically came out, was that hard rock love.
Do you remember your first gig you ever played in the Twin Cities?
I do. As a band of Scarlet Haze, it was December 21st
oh my gosh.
2004.
Wow, you do remember. Okay, where was it?
It was at a nightclub that was called The Rock. They're now called The Doghouse in Maplewood, Minnesota. And they were so, so, so nice to me. And they took on my first show, and, as an unknown band. And it was right before right before my 23rd birthday, I believe. So that's why I remember the date, because I thought it was the best, birthday gift I could possibly have. And we just had a record turnout. It was, hundreds of people showed up, and a lot of people that had supported me in the theater years and the theater days, and just the network that I had created for myself with other musicians in the Twin Cities.
And did everybody think that you were Scarlet Haze?
Yeah, of course. I loved that name, Scarlet Haze. Like, I thought it was just all inclusive, and I loved the idea of having a band and being a collaboration between four people. But very quickly, people started to call me Scarlet, and then people, Miss Haze was used a lot.
So how long was Scarlet Haze still? Because I know you still play some shows from time to time, but that first incarnation, how long was Scarlet Haze around?
So we went from 2004 until about 2000, I would say 12 or right at 11, when I went down with a vocal cord injury. I had a cyst on my left vocal cord, the size of like my pinky nail. It was actually very big, and it required emergency surgery, which subsequently put me into early retirement. It was right during the peak of our like glorious Scarlet Haze. We had a record deal. We were touring the nation. We had our first single out to radio that featured the guitar player Ron Tall, who was playing in Guns N' Roses at the time. And the single was written by Chad Kroeger from Nickelback. It was just a big, big deal, and it was a big push for us. And I ruined it by getting sick and having an injury. And so we instantly went into hiatus from then on. But then we resurged a little bit in 2013 until I just decided to audition for The Voice and kind of do my own solo thing.
And the rest of that is history. We'll get to that history in a moment. But let me go to that, because I've heard of the polyp on the vocal cord a million times. What do you think caused that to happen? Were you singing too hard? Were you singing incorrectly? Or was it just something that was going to happen?
Yeah, there's a couple different kinds. Like, there are the calluses or the polyps that are caused by overuse or misuse. And we hear of that all the time in our industry. But this was completely random, kind of how people get cysts on their wrists or on their shoulder blade or maybe on their face or on their finger. Like, this was just a collection of cells that was completely random. However, my doctor, who's amazing and I still see to this day, does think that, there's vulnerable places in people's bodies. And if you're using your vocal cords, it does kind of become vulnerable to whatever's happening. But it was just basically random, and it landed on my freaking vocal cord, which is, was the worst possible news for somebody who made a living singing.
Wow. How aggressive was the surgery to get that removed?
Oh, man, it was the most aggressive. there was just no way around it. I mean, it was a couple hours long and very tedious, and what was happening with me is that the cyst had grown so large and it embedded so hard that they actually had to take part of the ligament on my left side And that was very scary. And they had to, you know, do it very carefully because they knew that I wanted to continue in my career. However, we didn't know if that was going to be possible. We had to start from just square one again and just starting to speak again, and let alone singing. But once again, with in the hands of amazingly talented doctors in the Twin Cities, you know, they got it done. And the healing process for me was about exactly a year. But I ended up taking about 2.5-3 years off of actually singing professionally.
No kidding. So how long did it take you to be even able to talk again?
I was able to talk about 3-4 months later.
Okay.
I started to try 2 weeks after the surgery, and it was very, very difficult. And I ended up going to speech therapy, which saved my life. You know, you'd think a singer would go straight into like vocal lessons right away. But what I did is I started very slowly and went into speech therapy after that 2 week mark. So I was guided the entire way and ended up going to speech therapy for a subsequent year and a half. And when I really could have stopped seeing him, I didn't want to because he was making strides for me, not only in speaking, but those tricks that I was learning how to speak again was really translating into how to sing again and be healthy in my delivery.
Wow, that's fascinating, Kat. So after you take your time off, but then you get back to singing again, did your voice change to your own ear? Could you hear it differently, or did it sound like it had?
No, 100%. It was completely different, which to me was a little bit devastating. On a daily basis, I was doing my exercises every day, and mostly in the shower, which is a very, very healthy place to do that with the steam. And it was just different. And I hated that about it. And I wanted to hear what I used to hear. Also, even to this day, I've lost an entire upper range that will never come back because it's just, there was a hole in my vocal cords. So the scar tissue that formed around that hole, very safely, by the way, and the best that it could, just took out like 6 notes on the top of my range, which was, again, devastating to me. However, those notes are mainly used in classical singing and opera singing, which I was no longer doing. So it really, it was fine once I wrapped my brain around those things. But I'll tell you what, after I really got strong with my vocal cords and in singing again with that new voice, I became really happy with the results. And I feel like eventually I became stronger as a singer than I had ever been before, even though it sounded different.
All of this, again, lovely listener out there, all of this happened before the voice. That's fascinating to me. And I say this, and I've said this a million times. I say it to people on the street that I don't even know randomly. Your voice is unbelievable. You pack such an amazing amount of force. I can't even believe it. So if you're missing parts, I can't imagine what it was like before, because you still blow me away at this day. And I, again, the whole process fascinates me, and I'm sorry you went through that, but I would wonder how that is translated to the rest of your life, because even what you were just telling me a moment ago about the curbside concerts, you were looking at the big time, and then you had this giant setback, and then you found your way back again. Setbacks don't necessarily put you on the couch forever, do they?
Yeah, well, you know, back then when it happened, I definitely thought it was going to, and I knew that this little fighter inside of me was telling me not to give up and telling me to figure it out and telling me to pivot and see what happened. And, you know, once I was able to sort of let go and let the universe take over, it did all happen. So I think when I talk about it now, I think, you know, in the time it was like the most devastating thing that could possibly happen, and I was not happy. I had very situational depression. It was very hard to find purpose on a daily basis. I didn't necessarily want to wake up every single day, but now I can tell you that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I did have to learn how to pivot, and I did have to learn how to look and reframe life. And what it created was a different approach, and it created a different outlook, and it created different results than I ever thought would happen. And so because of that, when it came to this pandemic, I honestly used all of those tools that I learned in the past. And like I said, it was an instant. I mean, I took a couple of weeks to be, sure, you know, crawling up on the couch and like, what's happening and why? And then just remembered that little fighter again saying, this could be the best thing that ever happened, because you get to reimagine, you get to reframe it, and you get to pivot and see what happens. And from what I know is that a lot of success and different things come out of that. So we all should be open to that.
I love it. Again, much more with Kat Perkins. But quickly, I want to remind everybody out there listening to please go ahead and click on that banner right here on this website to help with Twin Cities Music Community Trust. It's a fund that is helping Minnesotans who have lost performances due to the pandemic and helping people with the effect on the live music industry that no bars, no clubs being open has had. Again, musicians, night staff, door staff, bartenders, security, stage crews, tour managers, merchandise sellers, photographers, everybody who makes what Kat and I do on a, well, sometimes during the summer, a daily basis possible. Those people are struggling right now, so you can help them if you have anything at all to give. Twin Cities Music Community Trust. Click on that banner right here. Thanks again to our friends at the XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light for making this possible. But if you can't afford, if you're one of those people struggling, just keep on listening for free. We're glad you're here listening to us. Kat Perkins, again, is my first guest on Songs for the Cities. All right, Kat, so from the moment you have that surgery to the moment the voice happens, there's a lot of different things. I could talk to you all day about it, but let's fast forward a bit. How did you even get an opportunity to audition to go on The Voice?
Oh, man, it was an awesome story of, I think, once again, the universe was sort of leading me in this way, because there was this video on YouTube that had went semi-viral, I guess, in the day. I didn't even really know that the video was up on YouTube. It was a video of me singing randomly in an airport, in the Amsterdam airport, actually. Overseas, there's a piano in the Amsterdam airport, and so on a very jet-lagged mission that we were overseas performing for the troops, actually, who are deployed over there, we decided to put on an impromptu concert in the middle of the Amsterdam airport. Hmm. And the video of me singing, you know, goes viral on YouTube. So what happens is NBC and the casting agency that runs The Voice, they curate videos from Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, and they watch for people in different areas of the country that they want to, like, invite to audition. And so that's what happened to me. I got asked to audition for season 6 of The Voice because they saw this video, and they were like, you know, we'd love to have you out. And so I took that opportunity.
Wow. So, you get the call saying to come in. Did you get a private audition? Did you go to one of the casting calls like so many of us have? Or how'd that go?
I got to bypass everything, jump on a plane, and just have my own private audition, which consisted of like 6 songs. It was like an hour long like audition and interview and again bypassing the line. And let me just be honest, I don't think I would have ever stood in line or done the casting call for those kind of things. You know, even over the years of me being a singer, people would come up to me and be like, you should audition for American Idol, or you should audition for The Voice. And I would just go, oh, yeah, you're so sweet. And I'd say to myself, absolutely not. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put myself out there like that. It's just not my thing. Granted, I love watching these shows, and I was a huge fan of The Voice before this happened. I just didn't ever think I would stand in line, especially in the frigid cold of the Twin Cities or the surrounding area, to do that. So I'm really lucky that that happened to me, and I did decide to just jump on that plane in a very scary turn of events, just blindly not telling anyone that I was doing it, taking the opportunity and see what, you know, what would happen.
So who are you auditioning for, and where did you audition when you got there?
The first one was for a casting agent, basically, that the one that had curated me from YouTube. Her name is Michelle, and it was just her in the singing room, and then there was another producer of the show that was kind of running the interviews and doing on-camera tests in the next room. So it was just 2 people that day.
Wow. How nerve-wracking was that?
Well, at the time, it was very nerve-wracking. I was shaking. I remember my guitar player went with me, and he was accompanying me for these songs, and, like, he split his pants, so we were laughing, and it was quite the experience of the day. But I remember having a lot of fun. I just remember thinking, wow, I hadn't dealt with that kind of nerves in a long time. However, what would follow in the nervous energy of my journey on The Voice was, you know, 50,000 times that day, but it was an interesting day. It was really cool and weird. And I just sort of let it happen and just kind of answered the questions and did what they wanted and, it was really funny because I actually went in there, and you'll appreciate this, and I had some country tunes prepared. At the time, I was just kind of getting my feet back under me as a singer, and there was a lot of badass country chicks that were super hot at that time, so like Miranda Lambert and Carrie Underwood, and so it was kind of fun for me to learn those kind of songs. Now, granted, they were, in my world, they were like rock and pop. They weren't necessarily country.
Yeah.
But on the radio as country. So I went in with kind of some of those songs in my back pocket, and what happened is I sang one of them, which was a Carrie Underwood tune, and the woman looked at me and she said, "Oh my gosh, I don't know if you've ever looked in the mirror, but if you have, I don't want to hear any more country music coming out of your mouth. Wow. I want to hear Led Zeppelin. I want to hear Fleetwood Mac. I want to hear something rock coming out of you if you're going to audition for this show."
Wow.
And so I had to quickly go to the archives. Thank God I had a live guitar player there and just sort of riff. And I did my best Fleetwood Mac. I did my best Led Zeppelin. I did my best Def Leppard. I did whatever I could to appease what she needed that day.
Incredible. So from that first audition, you said you did a number of auditions, but from that moment until you find out you're in the show, how many days go by? How many weeks? How many months?
Oh, man. So I had to do two other auditions after that, before the blind audition. So it was June, July, August, September. So 5 months from that point until the actual blind audition, but with subsequent other auditions in there and interviews and flying out to Los Angeles back and forth.
Wow. And so now you find out that you're going to actually get a blind audition. You have to be thinking at that point, I'm surrounded by great singers. I'm a great singer, sure, I can sing, but this is a one in a million chance that this may be the greatest moment of my life. How do you even wrap your head around the idea of that you're going to go in and sing for them to either spin the chairs or not spin the chairs?
Right. It's a really hard negotiation in the mindset because part of me just wanted to be like, who cares? You know, like, just go do your best and do what you do. But then you start thinking about those superstars sitting in those chairs with their backs turned to you, and everything sort of changes. The stakes get so high. And then you start thinking about the 15 million people that are working back home. And then you start thinking about all your friends and family who you really want to make proud, and the entire state of Minnesota and the entire Midwest of where I grew up. You know, you want to do them proud and do it justice. So the stakes become so high that it's actually, I blacked out. I mean, there's no other word, there's no other phrase to describe what happened. I just completely blacked out and hoped for the best, since I had done this in my past life.
Right.
And I did what I could, and I was really lucky. I got a 3-chair turn.
Unbelievable. And I remember watching it and how proud we all were of you, even though I barely even knew you then, but I knew you well enough to be super proud of you, because I can't imagine the pressure in that situation. I could spend all day talking to you about that entire run. I won't put you through that. Maybe we'll do it again at some other point. But instead of taking that angle, let me ask you this question. Tell me what it really is like when you're standing backstage before you go out to sing. I know it's a television show, so there's a lot of editing that goes on, but I'm going to guess there was some dead space, and then they say, okay, you're about to go. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And you work in radio, so you kind of understand, but I think the biggest lesson that I learned is that 3 minutes is like the longest time ever. It was such a span of time when they would go to commercial break before you would go to sing. It was just, it was the worst 3 minutes ever. And it felt like it was 24 hours standing in this blank space of just like, what is about to happen? And once again, you start thinking about those 15 million people watching and all of your friends and family and people that are hosting watch parties and the people you want to make proud. And then on top of just remembering the lyrics, remembering where you're supposed to stand, and in the lighting and the camera shots that you rehearsed all week long, all of those things are going through your head. So it is, for me, it was paralyzing. It was numbing every single week. But at the end of the day, when you get done, it was like a roller coaster. You'd be like, I want to do that again. Yeah. Let's do it again.
Right, let's
do it again and again and again.
Right. Did you have a moment before you walked out on stage where you said, I picked the wrong song? Damn it, I picked the wrong song.
No, I never let myself second guess.
Good.
At the last moment. Like the only time I would think about that is the one day that we had per week to actually make sure we were landing on the right song. And I have a great story about one of the songs you're going to play today about what happened and how we did change our route in the middle of the whole thing and put filming behind like 4 hours. People got overtime because Kat Perkins could not land on the right arrangement of the song, and Adam Levine and I could not agree on what needed to happen. There was only that first day that I would let that all sort of settle, and then I just went forward. And the more confident you could be moving forward with that choice and trying to just make it the best 90 seconds or 2 minutes of your life was the, you know, most successful you could possibly be on that show, and just moving forward. And that the confidence was hard. It took weeks for me to really get that sort of ingrained in my brain that everything was going to be okay, and you're going to do the best that you can, and you're here for a reason, and just to relax into it, you know?
So let's go right into that then, because again, I can't wait for you to write your book, because I know other parts of the story that we haven't had a chance to talk about right now, but that whole run of The Voice before and after and during, incredible. I would love to spend all day talking about it, but let's talk about the music. Which song were you referencing right now when it came to The Voice?
So I ended up doing a hard rock version of Daft Punk, Get Lucky. And here's kind of how I'll set it up. Like, the song that Adam wanted me to sing that week was Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. And I knew right away when he gave me that song that I was really unsure and unsteady about that. Because, listen, if you know that song, there's like five different singers. There's five different parts. There's lots of harmony. And so I was like, how are we going to execute this on television? I'm only one person. That's a lot of parts. And it's weird, right? And so the musical director on the show, Paul Merkovich, who is very famous in his own right and was in a lot of 80s hair bands. He's super talented, amazing musician. He came to the table and he said, well, why don't we pre-record, you know, four other cats and let's do the video stream like the actual Queen video. Oof. Where she'll be singing with herself, right? And I immediately went, you know, into sort of like panic mode of like, I don't want America to think that I'm lip syncing or do any sort of pre-recording in this whole mission, because it just didn't feel like a live performance, and I didn't feel like I could make that happen. And so I, of course, in the spirit of wanting to try everything that we could and being great, I went home to my hotel room that night and just sat with that. But I knew when I woke up that I couldn't do it. And so I was super into Daft Punk at this time. And I wanted to sing Get Lucky. And honestly, Adam Levine had done it in his last tour that I had seen on the road. So I knew that he knew the song. I knew that we could make this great. And I absolutely thought we need to do this. So I pitched it. I pitched it to Mr. Adam Levine in his camper on a Wednesday morning. And he was like, absolutely, let's do this. But that meant we had to change the entire course. And we had to get an arrangement done. And we had to get the musicians on board. We had to figure out how we were going to carry this through, edit a version. And we subsequently put filming behind by 4 hours. And we people made overtime that day in their union because we could not really get it together. We finally did. It just took a while, as sometimes creative things do.
Let's hear a piece of that right now from Kat Perkins on The Voice season 6. And I believe this was when you performed it. It was the top 8. So that's where you were sitting at that point when you came out on stage and sang Get Lucky by Daft Punk. Let's hear a little bit of that right now. And once again, Kat Perkins from The Voice actually performing Get Lucky by Daft Punk. And holy moly, I can't even imagine the pressure cooker that was going on when you're walking out on stage. But of course, at that point, you'd done a few weeks of The Voice, so you probably kind of, even through a high-pressure situation, had a little bit of a down. Were you feeling more comfortable at that point?
Yeah, man, I just got the goosebumps when you said that, because you're right. I think that moment was what we were calling in my little corner, we were calling kind of like the breakthrough moment, because I was able to sort of own who I was, own that moment, and really bring that idea to the table and really be creative that week with the band and Adam and make that happen. And so that gave me a lot more confidence to go out there and do what I needed to do. So I remember right before that performance thinking, I have nothing to lose and take no prisoners. You know, this was all by your design, and, you know, go for it. And I do remember feeling a lot more comfortable in that moment, and I had a lot of fun. I remember after there was fire. If you look it up online, sometimes you can find it on YouTube. Like, we had pyro that happened during it, and it was very exhilarating. And I remember when it got done, Carson was just laughing. Carson Daly was just laughing as he approached me to interview me, because he was like, you could just tell that I had so much fun in that moment and was able to live it and remember most of that performance, actually.
Wow, that's just great. What a moment in your history. Again, I can't wait to read your book. And you got a little time right now? Please write a book. Kat, please write a book.
It's happening. I'm trying. It's a different baby than writing music, but definitely I feel like I have a lot to say.
Fantastic. Again, you are listening to, by the way, Songs for the Cities. Thanks to our friends at XL Energy Center and Mick Goldenlight, who really do care about the musicians who are out and not playing right now. So you'll see a banner somewhere right here on this website. Please think about it. If you have the extra, if you don't, we get it. But if you have anything extra, the Twin Cities Music Community Trust would really like your help helping the musicians, the staff, the bartenders, the security, the stage crews, tour managers, merchandise, everybody who helps put shows together that you normally go to. Obviously, they're struggling like a lot of people right now, and we're trying to help them at the Twin Cities Music Community Trust, which you can donate to right now. Let's move right along to the second song we're going to feature on today's podcast. Which do you want to talk about now, Kat Perkins?
You know, I really want you to play the second single that I came out with when I was done with my voice experience. This song was called Drive, and the whole premise behind this song was to have something fun and upbeat and rock, obviously, but also I wanted to honor my small town upbringing by writing a song about what I used to do for fun. So I'm just going to date myself right off the bat, because what we used to do for fun in our little small town was drive around, and we called it taking mains. And we would just jump in our, you know, crappy cars, and we would just drive around and around and around and listen to music. And you know, in my case, I would get all the girls in, and we would roll the windows down, and we would just blare the music and sing, and you know, we would like wave at the boys, and I wanted a song like that. So my friend Shelley Fairchild, who's a huge, awesome songwriter in the business, she lives in Nashville. She helped me with this, and she co-wrote this song. And I think we really captured the spirit of just having fun and driving around.
Let's hear it right now. Here's Drive by Kat Perkins. And that, I'm sure, takes you back in time, not only to when this experience was happening for you, filming this great video, which, by the way, I'm watching right now, but also to your time on The Voice, and then a little farther back to what, by the way, in Union City, Ohio, we called Cruising Maine. So we did the same thing, but it was called Cruising Maine. That's what we did as well. And I ain't gonna lie to you. I'd like to do that tomorrow. I wish I could go out and cruise Maine right now. I really do.
Me too. We should go find a Main Street where we can actually make that circle. You know, there was a water tower in my case, so you could go up and around the water tower and back down to the fire station and up to the water tower and back to the fire station.
That's fantastic. Again, Kat Perkins, thank you for being my very first guest and spending so much time. And I literally could go on and on and on and on. But besides curbside concerts, which, by the way, I was just on katperkins.com. It's really easy. Go on katperkins.com. You can click right there, and maybe she'll show up with a small band at your curbside and give you a concert. Just a great idea and something you're doing right now, keeping the music momentum going, and, as I like to say, continuing to feed the river. I also want to mention, by the way, something you've done quite a bit of. You talked about it earlier, going over to sing for the troops. And I think right even before the coronavirus pandemic began, you were just on a trip overseas right before that, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, we had actually gone right before that happened, which which thank God, because, you know, I really do live for those moments. That's one of my favorite things that I do every single year. Usually I try to do one, maybe two trips over to our men and women who are deployed overseas. And we were supposed to go just a month ago. And mm-hmm. we, of course, didn't and haven't been able to reschedule or rebook. So it's really hard not to have that to look forward to. So thank God we got to do it right before that happened. I'll continue that work as much as I can and when we can, for sure, especially now, because, you know, it's been such a difficult time, not only for us, but for them and their families. So, that's a huge passion of mine still.
Tell me just a couple of generic questions before we get out of here. Tell me a couple of the clubs in the Twin Cities that you just love, whether it be to play at or just to go to see live music.
Oh, well, First Avenue, I mean, that's probably one of the last venues that I was at before this all happened. Iconic, just, you know, had a lot of my favorite artists come through, and even comedians, you know, they've taken a lot of liberties recently to do kind of different stuff there, which I love. Also, one venue that I have gone to every single summer since I've lived here is the zoo, the amphitheater at the zoo, at the Minnesota Zoo, and got the luxury last year of playing finally at that venue. And, you know, it was everything I ever dreamt of. I had seen so many of my favorite artists there. So that is one of my other favorite, you know, definite venues that is gorgeous and has a beautiful scenery around it. And just being outdoors, you know, in the summertime with their concert series. So those are my two most beloved and missed venues right now.
I can't wait to get back out and watch you and play with you, hopefully, at those facilities sometime soon. Any facility, please let us come play a show.
Yes, please.
Yeah, exactly. But also, I gotta give you this as well. And anybody out there who's spending some time on Cat Perkins' website, make sure you go see the Christmas show. I'm hoping that's something you're going to continue every year forever.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's the plan. I love Christmas. You and I are both Christmas babies.
Yes, we are.
It's just ingrained in our body to kind of love that time of year and have family around us. So absolutely, that's definitely my plan. And let me just say this. If we can't get it together before that happens, now my Christmas tour is already booked at this point, but if for some reason these venues don't survive, unfortunately, or we can't go back out there, I will figure it out. I'll come to your curbside. I will do curbside caroling with Kat. You count on me for bringing the Christmas spirit however I possibly can this season, and things to follow with my tour for sure.
Kat, on the inside of your right bicep, what does that tattoo say?
That says, dream it, do it.
That is
my motto since I was a kid.
That is your motto, and that is you in a nutshell right there. Kat Perkins, I love you. I really do. And thank you for being my first ever guest on the Songs for the Cities podcast. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for trusting me, and thanks for letting me tell my story. This is fun. I can't wait for people to listen and donate.
Kat Perkins curbside concerts. Go on katperkins.com and book her right now because they're going fast. See you later, Kat.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. The very first edition of Songs for the Cities with my friend Kat Perkins. Thank you, Kat, for your time, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out Songs for the Cities. We're going to do three more of these at least each Thursday, thanks to our friends at XL Energy Center. And by the way, that was their idea, between XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light, to do something like this to support the people out there who are normally entertaining us and helping the entertainers in the bars and in the clubs and all over the place. We're trying to help them out by raising money. Again, check out Twin Cities Music Community Trust, and please donate if you can. Other than that, my name is Chris Hockey. Thank you again for tuning in. Thank you to Mick Golden Light. Thank you to XL Energy Center. And I'll be here again next week with Michael Shines, my next guest on Songs for the Cities. Thank you for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.